Welcome to the Stellar Counseling Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mimko, the Stellar Counselor. I am located in the Tri-Cities area in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, offering counseling to youth, preteens, and adolescents. Counseling youth is more than just counseling the child. It is a family affair. My approach is to strengthen the family bond and empower your child through self-expression, self-regulation, improved confidence, and a sense of autonomy. Today we are going to talk about the starting point of my counseling process once we get past intake. I like to get an overall sense of what is the story that is driving the family. I really like to listen to themes, metaphors, common threads that kind of come out as you are telling the story of your child and the struggles that they're going through. This can have many components, but let's just start with the overall family system. I really want to drill in on what the family system is from the perspective of the child. But at first, I need to hear that from your perspective, the parent. The family system is what the child believes is their home, their safe space, where they come to at the end of the day that they feel they can relax and they can be themselves. I want you to think about, how do you think that they might define this? And is it the same as how you might define this for them? For the purpose of this episode, let's just refer to the family system as the family home. As we evolve your family narrative, as you're telling the story of how your family is, I want you to think about who is a part of this family home. And that is anything and anyone that impacts the child's safe space. Are there multiple parents living at home, or are they separated? Does the child live at two different homes? Are there siblings? And where in the birth order is your child located? Are they the oldest? Are they the youngest? Or are they the middle child? Do they have pets? Is there extended family that live there every so often, or that come to visit for extended stays? Is grandma and grandpa living in the basement? Or is there a brother that stays in the basement? Each person that's added to the family system adds a layer of complexity to the family system. From the perspective of the child, that adds more to their situation. The child may feel safe with one person, but another may add stress to them. Understanding all the different relationships that are within the family home gives an overall picture of how the child may view themselves within that family home. Who are they close to? Who are they not close to? Who do they feel that they can be themselves around? Or who do they feel that they have to hide from? Who are they in conflict with? Or who do they turn to resolve their conflict? The simplest of examples to look at here are when two parents are not on the same page. A child will ask their mom for something and their mom says no. The child goes to the dad and the dad says yes. If this pattern continues, the child knows that they can always go to their dad to say for something. This then turns into a triangulation between the mom, the dad, and the child. Any parenting that is going on between the mom and the dad is now compromised. The child has learned how to manipulate the situation for their benefit, but in terms of parenting the child to teach them how to work through their anxiety or develop the skills that you would like to see them develop, it becomes really difficult when both parents are not on the same page in how to handle even seemingly simple requests from the child. Identifying triangles will be an episode in and of itself at later date, but I want you to at first start to be aware of noticing if a triangle starts to appear as you start to take inventory of how these different conflicts are showing up in the family home. Is the child turning from one person to another to get their requests met? Is the child learning to manipulate the situation by playing two people against one another? That type of behavior is not intentionally malicious on behalf of the child. They've just learned they can move on to the next person to get what they want. It takes work on behalf of the parents to be a cohesive unit in order to ensure that type of triangulation doesn't occur. From a family system's perspective, each added person to the system creates more opportunities for triangles, and that allows for more opportunities for these types of situations to occur. So if you have an older sibling in the family home, and that older sibling is given responsibility, babysitting duties for a younger child, there may be some permissibility that's allowed from that older sibling to the younger sibling, or the older sibling might actually be stricter and thereby creating more stress for the child. These types of situations create uncertainty around the family home. And this is why later on we'll get into triangulation on another episode. It really is something that's important. Children can't understand what is actually happening, but they do implicitly know how to take advantage of it to get what they want. Lastly, it's important to understand who is a regular visitor to the family home. Are there grandparents that come on a regular basis? Are there aunts and uncles that come? Family friends? And are they coming on a regular basis? Is it every Friday? Or is it on a whenever they want to show up type thing? That appearance, while may be okay for you as a parent, may introduce a level of unpredictability to the child. And it's really important for the child to feel like they have a sense of knowing when and how they show up. Now, if it's a grandparent that they feel very comfortable with, it's a very different situation than if it's a friend that shows up at random times and can take you, the parent, away from that time that they feel like they may have had. Yeah, they may feel jealous, but this is their home and this is their safe space where they were feeling like they could be themselves around you, their primary caregiver. And then a friend of yours randomly shows up and takes away that time from them for an hour. That can be really stressful on the child. That doesn't mean that friends can't randomly show up, and that doesn't mean that we can't build resilience into our child. But it is something to be aware of on a long-term type of perspective when we're looking at the family system as a whole and how it may or may not be impacting our child's overall stress level and overall anxiety. Now that we've looked at the family system and the family home, it's really time now to drill into what's the family structure like, and what are the routines like? The structure is really the structural foundation of the family system. It's what the whole system is built upon. Kids like routine and kids like structure. Certainty allows for them to know and to expect what is coming. The less they feel like they know what is coming, the more stress and the more anxiety that they are going to display and that they are going to have. And so from a structure standpoint, I like to assess, you know, what does the day-to-day look like for the child? What does the week look like? And what does even the month kind of look like? And when we get into like an individual day, I kind of want to start with, what does a school day look like? You know, what time do they wake up? And what does that first hour look like? Is the child waking up 10 minutes before they have to get ready to go to school? Are they awake an hour beforehand and have time to eat their breakfast and brush their teeth? We all know, and we can all find plenty of stuff on social media and on the internet about the stresses of the morning, and I won't belabor that point here, but it is obviously an important aspect of the structure of the family routine is the morning of school. But where I actually really want to spend some time is what does after school look like? The kids have had a very stressful day, and even kids who have liked school, they've had to be in a very, very structured day where they've been told what to do, how to do, where to be for 6-ish hours, and they're in the low point of the circadian rhythm. It's between 2 and 4 o'clock. They may have low blood sugar, that they're tired, and they're coming home to you. You may, whether they go to daycare or not, but let's just say in this example, they're coming home. You're getting kids that are in the lowest point of their day. And you may experience someone who has their highest anxiety of the day. And what does that time reconnecting with you, the primary caregiver, coming back to the family home look like? And I really like to zone in on what does those first 15, 30 minutes look like from the child's perspective? And how does it feel from your perspective, the parent? What is going on during that time period? From a child's perspective, this is their time to reconnect with their family home, with their primary caregiver. This is a time for them to let all their stresses from the day slide off of them and slowly come back into being their authentic selves. Despite whether they like school or not, they have had to hold themselves in a certain way throughout the school day. And if they have to come home and continue to do more of the same, it becomes increasingly more stressful. And this is where you can start to see increased tantrums, meltdowns, but really also resistance to homework, resistance to extracurricular activities. So this is where we break down. Do they come home and eat? How do they decompress? How do you connect with them? And what is it that you talk about? And how do you talk about it with them? You know, I think oftentimes parents like to hear only the positive things. Or if they hear something negative, they want to be able to fix it. And what kids are striving for more than anything at the end of a school day is to reconnect with their family home and with their primary caregiver. They really don't want anything else. They don't want any more demands put on them. They don't want any more things asked of them. They just need to come home and reconnect. Get that food in them. Let them come back up to their own happy selves on their own. And then there's time to figure out what do the extracurriculars look like? What does the homework look like? And then we go from there. And then the next question is what does the weekend look like? Because that's the school days. What does the weekend look like? You know, that can be, again, what are the extracurriculars? Some kids are in lots of activities and some kids are not in any activities. Are there any family gatherings or any cultural events? You know, some families have parents that work on weekends, work evenings. So maybe it is only one parent who is with the kids. It's really, again, it's understanding that from a child's perspective, there's a school day and there's a non-school day. And how is that time spent? The idea of extracurriculars is something that's important to also address. You know, a lot of parents want their kids to be active and they want them to be healthy. And they put them into their various different activities. So it's understandable that if they don't see their kids liking one, how can I find the right activity for my child. And it's really hard, you know, kids, are they resisting because they don't want to do anything, or are they resisting because they don't like that activity? And how can you tell what the kid actually likes and doesn't like? And it is really hard to know, especially at the younger ages. And all I can say about that is continuing to expose your kids to as many activities as possible. You know, you want to show them that they give it a fair shot, but at some point you listen to your child that maybe that activity isn't what they want. And so parents who come in with children who just can't find an activity that works for them, we have to start to assess, what is it that the parent wants for the kid? And really break that down. And that also is taking a look at what types of activities does the parent do? And what types of activities has the parent done as a child? And just starting to break down that narrative as well. And are there any embedded expectations that are built into that, into how a child is expected to do their activities? The flip side of activities is the unspoken thing so far in this session is screen time, when it comes down to what our days look like. And often parents are chasing extracurricular activities as a way to prevent overusage of screen time. So I want to make sure my kid is in all these activities because then they're not on their screens. And so it becomes almost like a parenting tool to avoid the screen. And I want to challenge that strategy by saying, if by putting the child into a sport in order to not have them on their screen, those two are not really compatible to each other. The kid may say, I would rather stay home than play soccer because I want to play Roblox. So in your mind, they sound like, I'm not wanting to go to soccer because I want my screen. But in reality, they may not actually just want to go to soccer. And they do enjoy their screen. And their screen may have developed into a coping mechanism that is a way to manage their stress around being pushed into an extracurricular that they may or may not like. And that becomes, that's like any adult as well. I don't want to do something, so I doom scroll. And kids can see that behavior as well. It's really looking at the structure of the extracurriculars. Why are they being pushed? And why are they actually being rejected? And how can they be built into the schedule in such a way that is enjoyable, but also that the child feels like they actually have a say? The other two areas around structure and routine that are, you know, really important to give some time to is, you know, what does dinner time look like? You know, you mornings are rushed for school. Lunch times, often it's at school. Dinner times, for the most part, is at home. It's the one time where we're eating and everyone is together. There is a lot of evidence around ensuring that at least some of the dinners throughout the week are held together without screens, without distractions. And so addressing and assessing what dinner time looks like. Are they our home-cooked meals? Are we eating out as a family? What types of conversations are happening at dinner time? And it's just really addressing how dinner time sits within the family norms, and how does the family deal with the child who doesn't want to eat at dinner that particular day? You know, there needs to be flexibility around that, and just really assessing that time together as a family. Now, maybe in some families that's not really important. That time together is found elsewhere. But I think, you know, it's a starting point to really within this process of assessing the family system, it's really a starting point to ensure that there is dedicated time where the family is actually together with no distractions and has an opportunity to talk about anything. And the last part of the family schedule that I want to address and that causes lots of stress is bedtime. You know, again, consistency is king here. There is a lot of sleep science that is out there that all humans should be going to sleep and waking up at the same time. This isn't just about kids. So embedding a structure in place that promotes that at an early age is really beneficial, not only to our children, but to the parents as well. Is it practical and possible for every family? No. But again, this is a starting point of addressing what does bedtime look like in that family home, and where can we make little changes that may help the situation out. Having, again, more certainty and a more of a sense of control on behalf of the kid really goes a long way in alleviating some of that stress. So if the kid feels pushed, stressed out, confused, always feels like someone's demanding something of them, it's going to become a really stressful time period. It also is assessing what does their sleep hygiene look like. You know, is it a dark room? Is there availability of a nightlight? Is there availability of all of these things? And I think addressing sleep as its own separate topic within the family structure is really key. Undeniably, getting a full night's sleep on a regular basis is the number one thing anyone can do for their mental health. And so encouraging and creating a system that promotes that type of behavior is really crucial to making positive steps forward in the mental health for your child. And the final thing that I like to go over before we kind of wrap things up on the family system side of things is really the values and norms of the family. And this isn't necessarily like a cultural specific thing. Every family, every relationship develops its own values and norms and its own language and its own culture. And so it's really understanding what makes that family tick. And sometimes, especially if an extended family is really close with grandparents and aunts and uncles, there can be, you know, intergenerational customs that have been passed down that are really important to really understand how that can impact the day-to-day, or really, really often really the week-to-week or major holidays, how time is spent on weekends, how birthdays are celebrated. Essentially, the goal is to figure out the overall family expectations. Remember, we're trying to understand this from the child's perspective. If the child's downtime is always filled with family obligations and they're always being taken to different family dinners or different family celebrations, and they're never really told why, or they're only told this is just how we do it in our family. Now, I'm not saying this is how it may be within the family. I'm just saying sometimes from a child's perspective, this is how they may feel. And through the initial intake and through the initial process of getting to know the family and getting to know the child, this is why I like to understand how the family operates and what types of family obligations are important. We can then build out that framework and then put it into language that the child can understand, and then bridge that gap for the child. And then the child is then able to bring themselves into alignment with those family values. And then that can help ease some of the anxiety around some of the stress that may be there. Again, we're looking for anywhere there may be some ambiguity for the child, anywhere where they're not understanding what is expected of them. But from the parent and from the family's perspective are very important that they maintain within the family household. And again, this is why understanding the family home and understanding the family narrative, what are the cultures, what are the norms, what is the family structure, all of these things are really important to build out and understand early on in the intake process, early on in the therapeutic relationship with both the child and the parent, as I'm trying to put these pieces together to build the foundation. Because without understanding that and without having a full picture, it's really hard to make sure that we're working together in alignment to move towards the goal of whatever the presenting issue that was brought in. If a child's coming in with high anxiety or with ADHD symptoms or with OCD symptoms, at the end of the day, we need to understand what this family narrative is at the house, at their home base, where they feel safest, or where they should feel safest. And I need to understand all of those components and then work with not just the child, working with the parents and working with the primary caregiver to put all these pieces together and make sure, again, that we're all moving together in the same direction and that we can bring the child on board, that we're using the appropriate language, that we're at their level, and that we're able to bring them in the direction towards really getting them to express themselves in language that is appropriate for them, getting them to regulate themselves, and really along the lines of getting them to be an autonomous human within this family system. And ultimately, that is where you'll see that anxiety ease and that self-confidence rise. So I think this is a great place where we can wrap up this conversation. Thank you for listening to the Stellar Counseling Podcast with your host, Ryan Mimko. Please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please send questions and feedback to me on Instagram at The Stellar Counselor. Thank you, and bye.